Hi, my name's Christian Hull, and this is Uncommon.
Uncommon is a production by Neural, an agency that helps both brands and talent tell their story. To learn more, just visit neural.com. That's NERALLE.com. My guest this week, Christian Hull, comedian, podcaster, entertainer, and author of Leave Me Alone. I was trying to think of icebreakers, and I got to say, the best interview, podcast interview you've ever done, I think, is Luke and Lewis's, where you've been the center of attention, so to speak. And it was very funny listening to it. The term PhD in D. Do you still carry that around?
Yeah, a PhD in D. That's a PhD in dicks.
Yes, it's very appropriate.
Are you going to hit me with a dick-related question? You're going to test my knowledge?
No, I'm not like those guys. I'm not obsessed with it.
They are obsessed, aren't they? Mm.
They are. There's something schoolboyish about it, which I quite...
That's the best description of those two. They're just like schoolboy lads. Like, what's going on?
Penises.
I draw a dick on the wall. Yeah.
Tell me, what's your earliest inception moment of funny to you?
Okay, you're using big words. Don't forget who you're talking to here.
I know.
I've just got a PhD in D, nothing else. Inception of funny. Like, when did I really laugh?
Where was like that first moment that you remember where you just absolutely died with laughter?
Oh, Christ. I would like to just openly admit that I'm self-diagnosed early onset dementia. So, I can't even remember what happened last week. That's a really annoying question that I can't answer it, which is really annoying. I laugh. The thing about me is, and this is why I had such a successful sort of producing career in radio, is I laugh at everything. So I was like such good support for radio shows, because they'd make a joke and it would be terrible, but I would always just laugh hysterically at it.
Yeah. Do you think, like, growing up, was there a certain element of either of your parents' nature that sort of filtered to you that made you that jovial type of person where you found funny in just innate things?
No. Well, my parents aren't, like, bitter. Dad's got a great sense of humour. Mum... her sense of humor's gotten a lot better. she dotes on, so I've got triplet brothers, and so she dotes on us. So when we would try to prank each other or do anything that would involve her, she just couldn't do it because she was like, I love you too much. I can't lie. I can't trick you. So Dad, a drop of a hat, you know, he'd be pranking us. So I got a lot of humor and that dry dad joke style stuff from Dad.
Yeah. So do you think that, was there anyone early on that you sort of picked this up from that influenced your idea of funny?
The earliest I can remember was a really good friend of mine in high school, Chantel, and she was like really just like, it's a joke, 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 joke. But it was all, it was like, it wasn't punchline related. It was just like, we'd be talking about a story and then she'd be like, oh, imagine, and then he pulls out a knife and stabs you. Like, we're teenagers, so we found that hilarious, and it was sort of like dick related, and like we'd be crying at school, like it would be so funny. And I got a lot of humor from her, and then I've noticed I've absorbed a lot of humor from friends at school. I was really quiet and shy at school because I'm obviously a gay, and so when you're an obvious gay, high school's not a really great spot to be.
Not a kind place.
No, so I did a lot of listening, and I think I developed the best bits of my friend's humour, and I sort of packaged them all into one.
Mm. So you were a shy kid at school. Interesting.
In high school. Just in high school. Get me out of school. Loud, like star of the family, constantly talking, you know, seeking the spotlight at all the family events and anything.
Do you think you were shy in that environment because you're inherently shy person? Like, I know you've spoken about liking your own time and being introverted, or do you think it was sort of that awkward stage of life where you were realizing maybe you were different, you were gay, and that actually was the reason why? Like, do you ever observe that in hindsight?
Yes, definitely. I don't mistake being introverted for being shy. Like, I'm definitely not shy, but I'm an absolute introvert.
Yeah.
But it was definitely just the awkwardness of knowing that I was gay. Looking like I was like a little butch lesbian when I was a kid. Like, I didn't have a growth spurt. You know, my voice never dropped. And I was just awkward, and I knew I was awkward, and I knew it was pretty obvious that people could tell. I mean, they told me. I was like, no, I'm not. I like women. Ooh, girls are hot. You know, like, unconvincing. And yeah. I think I had one incident in year 7 where I got bullied. It was like the first time I'd ever been bullied, because in primary school, it was nothing. I went to a really small primary school and everyone got along really well. And the worst I got was, oh, you're a girl, because I hung out with girls. And I was like, well, uh-huh. I'm not. I'm obviously not. And that was it. But then when you get to high school, it was like, yeah, I'm going to bash you. I'm going to, like, kill your family. And, like, I thought those threats were real.
Yeah, right.
And so when I first heard it, I was like, well, I shut down. Like, it freaked me out. And I just thought, right, how am I going to get through the next 6 years of this? And I ended up just going to the library during lunch.
What does a kid do at that stage? Do you talk to your parents about it?
No.
Just keep it to yourself?
Kept it to myself. Just completely kept it to myself. I was really lucky that I had a great home life. Like, I had the best home life, super supportive. Mum and dad, they're older, so they were older parents. I think when my brothers were born, they were 36. Mum was 36, dad was 44. My brothers are 5 years younger than me. And so I just had had more life experience, didn't have the mortgage. So we had a pretty financially free upbringing. Mm. As financially free as you can with 4 children in Sydney. And didn't have social media, so couldn't get bullied at home. Mm. So it was great. I didn't worry. School didn't bother me. I was like, I'll just get through it. It'll be fine. Just go to the library. I've got a routine down pat. Do my homework in the library during lunchtime and then just get through classes. And I had friends that I could sit with in class, which wasn't bad. It was just like recess and lunch where you're on your own in the middle of everyone.
What did you think you were going to be like as a kid?
Oh, here we go. This is gross. I hate admitting this. I'm famous.
Yeah.
That's it. Not for anything, I'll just be famous. I did, when I smartened up, so I got to about year 11, and when I really started to think about it, I have a very artistic family. They're heavy in the arts, and I wanted to be like I wanted to run the Museum of Contemporary Art in Sydney, the MCA. Really? Yep. Okay. And I genuinely looked into that. Very glad I didn't. It's very quiet. You've got to be really quiet in that place. And someone suggested I do radio, because they were like, oh, I don't know if TV's for you, because I was such an ugly kid. And they go, radio's good. And I was like, actually, that's a really good point.
And who is this person? Just a random?
No, this was my neighbour. So we're very close. And it was a really good, so she was gardening. I remember this so clearly. It's weird the things I remember. She had this beautiful hedge. This is when we lived in like Pennant Avenue in Dennis. It was a huge like 9-foot hedge and she was trimming it. And I walked past, she goes, oh, hi, what are you doing? Blah, blah, blah. She's like, oh, what do you want to do when you leave school? I was in year 12. And I was like, I don't really know. Like, I'm thinking something, maybe TV or something like entertaining. Like, I didn't want to be an actor, but I was like, maybe acting. She goes, oh, have you thought about radio? I was like, oh, no, I've never thought about that. That's a really good point. She told me, she's like, go to community radio. Here's how you do it. I was like, that's genius. And I literally went home and did some research and ended up volunteering at a community radio station a couple of months later.
Was that at the start of year 12? Because I know you did the Diploma of Broadcasting at AFRTS. So I'm curious as to how that sort of permeated in your brain. Were you like a rabid dog? You're like, I'm going to do radio. I'm going to study this. I want to do that.
It was probably halfway through year 12. Yeah, and right. I went, great, I don't need to do my HSC because here's the path to get to radio. That was the plan. I was like, I'll just volunteer and then that'll lead to something. And then it led to doing work at a big radio station called FBI, which is also volunteer-based, but it's like Triple J, but it's a community station.
Okay.
And they were like so cool, so cool. And then I did a lot of traveling. So I volunteered and did radio as well as travel and work overseas for about 4-5 years. And then was like, all right, I need to like, let's try this radio thing properly.
Ah, okay. Cause it was really interesting. Like before every episode, my producer, I've taught him the skills and the ways of research. And he went through and I'm like, oh, he's got a great career. Just straight into AFRTS and straight into SEA. And it's like, what year did he graduate? So this makes a lot more sense now. You obviously had some time to really find yourself 4 or 5 years before that.
Yeah. So I did straight out of school radio, community radio. So I was doing a breakfast show 3 days a week as well as working full time. And then, so it was 3 days at community radio at 2RRR as well as working at FBI. I was their volunteer director. And I would take large breaks and go and work in California at a summer camp. So for about 4 months, I was overseas, and that's where I sort of discovered who I was.
Why the summer camp?
A friend of mine did it, and I thought it was the most disgusting thing ever. I was like, oh, I'd never do that. That's terrifying. And as I thought about it more and more, and she was so excited to do it, I was like, oh, yeah, and I'll Google it. So I did a bit of looking in. I was like, oh, that looks quite fun, and I felt really stagnant. Like I've been working in retail for maybe a year and a half. And I was like, what am I doing? I hadn't done uni. All the friends were sort of, you know, knew what they were wanting to do. And I just didn't. And I think it was about 2 weeks before I actually ended up flying to America. I went, you know what? I'm going to try this. I'm going to go online. I registered. They rushed me through. They rushed my visa through. They rushed everything through. And I remember going, oh shit. I was like, oh, Dad, I need help booking some airline tickets for next week. I'm going to America. And so it just happened so quickly and ended up going and doing a summer camp at the Manson Family Ranch.
No.
It wasn't the Manson family, but it was like it looked like it in California. It just looked like this. Everything was outdoors. There was no indoors, no flushing toilets, no hot water. It was the complete opposite of who I was as a person. I hate animals and I hate the outside, and this was a farm camp.
Do you remember the name of the camp?
Oh, I do.
It's so funny looking at, like, when you Google Summer Camp California,
all the different names.
Canyon Creek. This
one has a controversial name, which I didn't realize at the time. It's called Plantation Farm Camp.
Okay.
It wasn't a plantation, but it was just sort of this big farm. I don't think it exists. It doesn't operate anymore. Oh! Might do.
It could do.
But it's like this gorgeous, in the middle of a redwood forest.
Yeah, right.
It's got the classic lake, the barn. It's got all the animals.
Is it far from San Francisco or Sacramento?
Yeah. I mean, that's a good 2.5 hours away.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it still does. Plantation Farm Camp overview. Like, it looks like it still exists, but I feel like that would be a very interesting experience.
It was. Because, you know, technology, no news, no TV, no nothing. We had no connection to the outside world for 3 months.
Just animals and the outside.
Yeah.
So, okay, SCA, we've got a first assistant music director / floater. Then you move to an announcer job. Then the Dan and Maz thing comes along. Then the video producer thing comes along. I know things really kicked off for you in finding what you were good at during the time that you discovered, well, you started working on Dan and Maz, but I think it was actually the YouTube Hits channel that you were working on and playing around with video, so to speak.
Mm.
I was curious, when you think about the time that you have had in radio, is there something principle-wise that you pulled as an entertainer at all?
Mm. Yeah. Oh, yes. Took me years to learn this. I feel like a lot of people will go into the industry, be it radio, be it entertainment, and feel like they're owed something. You know, I did my time here. I've done this and I've done that. Right. Now I'm owed, you know, this breakfast show host job. So it is mine. And then someone else gets it and you're like, what? And it took me years to understand that, you know, the entertainment, it's a business. They actually don't care about you. You're not actually owed anything. You might think you are, but you're not. And that was a really hard lesson to learn. And I think because I wanted to be Kyle Sanderlands, and there was a path. There's just, they tell you there's a path to get there. and it was to do regional radio, to come in to do, you know, Metro and to host a music shift, and then you get a breakfast role and that's just what happens. But it just wasn't happening for me, and years were going by, and I thought, well, this isn't going to actually work. Pay is woeful. I just became really miserable and a little bit sort of
jaded.
If you want to be a singer but you can't sing, you have to make that realization. I was like, oh, I want to be Carl Sanderlands, but I'll never be Carl Sanderlands. And so I had to come to that conclusion, and that's when I went, oh, shit, where do I go? Like, I've got no other skills. I haven't studied anything. And so I fell into a breakfast producing role as like a phone bitch. You know, hello, 131060, what's your favourite cheese? Oh, camembert pudding, you're through to the studio. And so it was this mindless, just boring job, and then things just sort of fell into place. And that's when I realized, oh, I've got to really go off and do this. I've got to do this myself. Mm-hmm. I have to actively go, this is what I want. I have to tell people what I want. I was never doing that. I just thought I was owed these things so they'd come to me. But I really had to then put my foot down and go, this is, I want to do this. How do I get here? And I just ask bosses, how do I get here? And they're like, well, that's a bit of a pipe dream. I'm like, well, just tell me how to get here and I'll do it. And so it was picking up cameras. I was looking at gear. You just got to fight for yourself.
You just got to put in the hard work. And I was curious, like, what was that first video? What was the first bit you put out under your own name finally?
I think it was a Vine, and I was working during the summer holidays, and I'm filming my computer screen. It's got a beautiful beach backdrop, so there's a video of the beach rolling in, and I put my phone up to the computer screen, and got my two fingers together, bent them over, and put them in front so they look like knees. See how that sort of, and then I was like, just having a great time. Nope. And then I pull the camera back and it's my fingers and I'm working. And that just blew up, and BuzzFeed took it and shared it. And that was like my first video.
Yeah, right.
And I was like, oh my God, BuzzFeed shared it. I was like, oh, this is easy.
and it was Vine as well. Vine.
Yeah. 6 seconds. No effort whatsoever.
How long did it take for you to realize, because you obviously put this out on Vine, did you have a period where you were like, okay, I'm just going to stick to this Vine thing and test this out more? Or were you like, I have to find these other platforms at the time?
No, because everything was still pretty new. Like, YouTubers were a thing, but there was no sort of big viral stuff on Facebook. And so Vine was sort of the easy wins. You get view counts. It's like TikTok. You could get these view counts quite easily, and it was really motivating. So you'd make these Vines and then I'd share them on Facebook and then they do really well. So I was like, oh, maybe I can make longer versions for Facebook. And so I was doing that, and then they were doing really well. And so I started looking at Vines and seeing and getting longer form video content ideas from these Vines and putting them on Facebook. I was like, oh, this video content is doing really well here. And so then I bought a wig. I was like, oh, I needed a female character. I was like, I'll just play a female character. So I bought a wig. It was a blonde Trish wig. Yeah, yeah. And it sort of snowballed from there.
I think that intrigues me the most about you is the recent developments with things like the Fuck Off Shop. Like, that to me is a stroke of genius in a way.
Luck.
It's a bit of luck as well. I'll give you that. But it's also realizing that there's something there. I know you've got Complete Drivel. I don't know if who's the cunt game. Is that yours?
No, but I love that everyone thinks it is. So it's a secret. It's a popular gaming company that developed this game and that doesn't want to be associated with it, but needed someone to help market it. And they'd seen all my Fuck Off Shop stuff and was like, oh, fits like a glove. And that's so said here. And so we signed a deal and I get 15% of all profits. And they were like, just if you can promote it, because we can't, because we don't want to be seen. We've got all these family-friendly games and we don't want this in our repertoire. And I was like, absolutely.
Yeah, right. So you got that, the book, which was recently published, and then, of course, there's the content, YouTube, the podcast, TikTok. Instagram is where I actually found you. And I think I doubled down on your content. I think it was the Trish videos on Instagram.
Really?
Yeah, like
I always find that the hardest platform.
Oh, but we're talking a few years ago.
Yeah.
So it was a few years ago, but then where I really doubled down on your content was probably TikTok, because I've gone deep on TikTok. And just things like the crafts videos and stuff like that. I just can't, you know.
It's infuriating. Yeah, yeah. You go down a rabbit hole. Like, I'll spend hours on TikTok.
Yeah, do you, I don't know if you look at your phone usage, but if I look at the last week, I think on average, if a day is say 6 or 7 hours, fuck, I'm just looking at it, half my time is on TikTok.
Yeah, I think I'm like 7 or 8 hours a week just on TikTok.
On just TikTok, yeah. But you know, you can also make an argument that it's work. In a way,
it's absolutely work.
Yeah, that's what I tell my partner. I'm like, this is definitely work. And of course, because we're trying to manage talent, it's like, well, I just got to find the next talent to pitch them to sign them on. So yes. I spend more time on the For You section than I do on like personal subs, because I just want to find new people.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, that's where I sort of doubled down on your stuff. And so it just had me thinking, like, how do you view yourself today? Who is Christian Howell today? You know, I know you're down in Sydney, you're consulting for a job at the moment, but when you look at your typical week, do you see yourself as primarily an entertainer and creator, or do you see yourself now as a businessman? Because you have these other things.
Great question. Unfortunately, I see myself as a businessman, and I don't want to. I've created a business that sells products, and I never thought I would do that, and I never wanted to do that. But the opportunity is just so enormous in terms of so many people are buying the products that I'm selling, and it's my only source of income, that I'm putting myself as a businessman first, because that is where the income is coming from, and a content creator second. And so I hired 2 full-time staff.
Wow.
So, because last year was just so – I made $500,000 last year. This was just on my own. And I was like, I need to expand the – Christian Howell entertainment side. So I wanted a full-time videographer and Phoebe, who's a content producer. And so I hired them for the Christian Howell side, and the $500,000 of revenue that it was just making just stopped, because, I thought this tap of money was just going to continue to pour. And then it just suddenly, Christmas hits and then people stop spending, but also the TikTok that went viral that basically earned me all that money, you know, people will buy the gimmick that I was selling, like this little, you know, fuck off flower pendant. And then once my audience has bought it, that's it. They've bought it. And so I just didn't realize that. And I was like, oh, I've got to come up with something new. And I've got to come up with something new sort of every month to keep sales ticking over. And so that's when I switched from creating content to creating products to keep the cash flow coming, because I've now hired 2 employees. I've got 4 casuals making products. You know, like I've sort of been like, oh, okay, there's a lot of overheads now, and I financially need that money coming in. So I lost, whether this was COVID or fuck off shop related, I lost a lot of or all of my sponsorship deals. Like, they just stopped coming in. And that was the bulk of the money, and touring, doing comedy shows. And that obviously stopped because of COVID. And so I had this freak out in January. I was like, oh, I've got $60,000 owing in invoices. I've paid all that money that I earned. You know, the tax man took a big chunk, big chunks going to wages. And then I've spent the rest of it. I bought a new bathroom, wish I didn't do that. It's a beautiful bathroom, but I should have been more financially smarter. And then the rest I bought in new product inventory, because I got so excited. I was like, oh my God, oh my God. I went from having, you know, at least $200,000 in my business account to $2,000. And
Jesus.
I was like, shit. And I owe 60 grand at that point. I was like, shit, shit, shit. Like, the money I've invested into inventory, but that's still a good 3 or 4 months away before I get the product. And so it was just sort of like, what the hell do I do?
Isn't that is just the ultimate definition of running a business, is like how like finding yourself watching that business account on a weekly basis.
Hourly basis, refreshing that, how much have we sold today?
Yeah. I had to do this thing that I learned this really interesting lesson. I previously worked in the finance industry, and one lesson I learned was like, always manage your downside risk. And all I need to know is, can I make payroll? You know, like, can I pay staff and the expenses on a weekly basis? And so that if I got that, I'm chilled. I know that I can do the things I need to do. So long as I'm tracking that.
But is there any imparting wisdom that you can bestow upon me? Tips?
The only thing I can say is like, what?
Oh my God, I'm not asking Siri. Sorry, my Siri's like, I can't answer your questions. No, thanks, Siri. You're good.
Can I help you? Why is he English?
Yeah. Because have you not heard? Listen, he's so sexy. Hey, Siri, tell me a joke.
I stayed up all night wondering where the sun went. Then it dawned on me.
I mean, that's not that funny, but like, sexiest voice ever. I'm just like, oh.
English.
Every time Siri tells me to do something, I'm like, yes, I'll do it.
Yes, the English accent does definitely do it. there's something about that. It's funny when you look at TikToks and like just the comments from Americans being like, oh, this is so much better. I could just sit here listening to this person's voice the whole time.
Yes, it's just the accent. The Australian accent is woeful.
Oh, no.
Oh, no, Cleo. The condensation.
Oh, my folio is broken. Oh no.
No. Someone said the best thing. It was like Australia says no, like no, but it's spelled N-A-E-I-O-U.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, that is very, very true. I love that this is a trend now also on TikTok is the Australian saying oh no is a real thing. But to answer your question, can I impart any wisdom on business? Honestly, the only thing you can do, if we're talking money related.
Yes. Yeah.
The only thing you can do is just be aware of your situation. And like I said, the only thing that I do on a weekly basis is I check the bank account, incoming invoices, what we owe people in the next 30 days. It's all over the next projected 30 days. And if I know that we've still got money positively in the bank account, I'm happy. And I've gotten to a point now where like, I feel uncomfortable when the business account gets down to like 15 grand. Like I get a bit itchy.
Oh, yeah. You know my $0, I try to make 50,000.
Yeah.
So like if we go below 50, which I've never hit 50 yet, I still have yet to get back to 50, but that's what I deem start to worry when it gets below 50.
Like,
we need to top it up a bit.
Another thing you can do that I learned during COVID was we would put money aside. We've had like we have a business savings account. So now we've got like about a month and a half's worth of expenses in a savings account.
Yeah, that's what I look at my mortgage account as. I'm like, well, if it all goes to shit, I'll just redraw from the mortgage.
Yeah, the fucking offset account. Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah.
That's so funny.
My dream of paying that off in 3 years. Nah.
Mm. I'm just going through the process now of getting a mortgage as a business owner. Isn't that fun?
Oh, do you want me to tell you a story?
Yeah.
I got, when I was working full-time in radio, I applied online for a loan and in 24 hours I got that approval. And I was like, great. I didn't end up, my offer fell through when I wanted to buy a place in Melbourne. And then I cut myself loose, was earning four times as much money I was in my radio job and went, well, it'll be easy to get a loan, obviously. And I went through the same sort of process. I got nothing and I was like, oh, shit. And then I really wanted to buy a place and then I got a mortgage broker and it took, it was like pulling teeth. I was like, but look at my account. Like I have saved at least 20% of a deposit that I want. Like I've got all these sponsorships coming in. It was just impossible. And what I didn't realize was I put in an offer for an apartment before I'd asked for approval. I saw this beautiful apartment in Brisbane and I went, I'm going to offer X amount of dollars subject to finance. And then like frantically calling a mortgage broker being like, all right, you know, I need to get 565 grand approval. And it never happened. And so I lost the deadline, came around. My deposit was about to disappear because I'd pushed it and waited and waited. And it was like the day of that the estate agent said, look, we're going to have to put it back out on the market. I was like, oh, God, you know, 20 grand gone. And it was literally like 10 minutes after the estate agent had said the deal's off that the bank had approved it. So I was frantically calling the estate agent being like, it's on.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. It was so stressful.
When you went through the broker, out of interest, were they asking for things like your company income and stuff like, or ABN income and stuff, like tax returns?
Everything, tax returns. He was talking to a tax agent at the tax office and they were waiting for, what's that thing you get? You get a little tax form at the end, NFT. Yeah.
Your statement of
yes.
something. I mean, yeah. I'm going through this right now because the thing is that we had a company and then the, you know, you've got these losses that you built up when you first start out with the company. Yes. And so my wife goes and starts working in the business and it's like, oh, well, we'll just take owner's drawings because then you eat up all this tax, right?
Mm-hmm.
And as you learn, what you actually need is a PAYG, like salary.
Yes.
And so they wouldn't recognize like her first year of working in the business, which was like 2019. Because they're like, oh, well, technically she's only earned 15 grand. I'm like, no, she hasn't. Fuck off. And they're like, no, well, we won't recognize the owner's drawings. We see it as dividends. So
where are you wanting to buy?
It's a tough one. I mean, it's southeastern suburbs in Melbourne because we're based in Melbourne.
Okay.
And my parents are in the Bayside area. Her parents have moved down to the peninsula. So it's got to be ideally somewhere there.
Oh, that's nice.
It's very nice. So yeah, but honestly, with the amount that we'll probably get pre-approved, we're probably looking at sort of that Carnegie, Glen Huntley, Caulfield zone. And I grew up around Bentley. So
okay.
It's not too bad, but it's the pain of owning a business, right?
Oh, have you ever Googled what you could get with the money that it costs to live in Carnegie in like France?
You've come across that TikTok account, haven't you?
Actually, yes, I have. I've seen TikToks like that. And even in America, like the money, oh my God, like there was a castle in France and it was like $625,000.
Yeah.
Like Australian dollars. And then you get like 20 hectares of land and like this huge castle and these beautiful gardens. And then they cut to like what you can get in Australia. And it's like a tiny one bedroom apartment in Sydney.
Yeah. Well, the one yesterday was exactly that. $565,000 actually, bang on. And it said you can buy this chateau, which has six rooms and this like an acre of land, et cetera. I was just trying to find the profile. And then it goes, or in Australia, you could buy this suburb just. You could buy this apartment just outside of Hobart.
Yeah, like, my apartment was $565,000.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Have you seen, I don't know if you've seen the comparison. It's like $1 million will get you in Melbourne, Sydney, and Brisbane. It's actually quite fucking depressing. Like Brisbane, $1 million will get you a four-bedroom house in suburbia. $1 million in Sydney will get you a derelict apartment. And in Sydney, and then Melbourne, it'll get you a two-bedroom townhouse.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was very interesting seeing that.
I've gone down the rabbit hole. There's a certain real estate, I wish I could remember the name, real estate company that only deals in mega mansions. And so they list all these beautiful mega mansions. You just pick it across the world and you pick them. So we would go to Sydney and you'd be looking at like, you know, Vaucluse.
Yeah.
And it was $25 million. And you're just like, oh, like, do you look at real estate and dream and just go, yes, one day. And then the New York, you know, a billionaire's row for $45 million, this penthouse.
So I think I know who you're talking about because I interviewed this guy, Marty Fox, who was quite a character. White Fox Real Estate is sort of like the, you know, luxury sales sort of agency here in Melbourne. But the guy is a Gavin Rubenstein. In Sydney, Rubenstein Group.
I'm not sure. I don't remember because it was just, I just Googled like $25 million home Sydney and then that led me to this website.
Because he's like the Marty Fox of Sydney, but on steroids because that Vaucluse, anything on the bay, so to speak, or port, whatever you want to fucking call it, Vaucluse, Potts Point, all that sort of stuff. It's just
Double Bay.
Ridiculous. Double Bay. And the thing is that this guy was just lucky to have grown up around the area and he chose to get into real estate. So
such a good time to be in real estate.
I know. It's fascinating to watch though and see that sort of stuff. I got to say, you would find, I don't know if you've ever seen this guy, his name is Zed Real Estate. Zed Nasheet is the guy. Zed Real Estate is the profile. At some point in time, someone has to do a parody of this guy.
Oh, God. Does he do like take you through homes?
Yeah. And instead of saying it was sold, he says it was zold with a Z.
Oh, my. That is the best, but equally revolting.
And it's so good because, like, you know, he's got a classic case of like.
Look at their profile photos. They look like they're like the Avengers.
Yeah.
When meet the team. Oh.
It's so ridiculous. It's so, look at it. It's so ridiculous. And he is like, I follow him just for the laughs. Like it's seriously one of the funniest things. And you know, like I can say this having a WOG background, but this guy is just a classic WOG. Like Lamborghinis. He's got cap teeth.
So great.
He's like, listen, guys. Like we've got this property here. It's gonna sell. It's sold. It's absolutely sold. And
it's sold.
Someone
what a legend
has to do. Like I would love to see you do a reaction to this.
I really want to do a parody because I watch a lot of apartment tours. You know, like, hi guys, we've got access to this $44 million penthouse apartment, and then they go through, and it's the most disgustingly wealthy, like just so much shit you don't need, like four wine fridges. Well, first of all, these wealthy people don't use their kitchen. Their butlers use the kitchen and they go through and it's just, it's gross because it's just like, and this wall is made of diamonds.
Do you think though, if you had that money, would you actually spend it like that?
Absolutely. But you're talking people that have probably billions of dollars.
Yeah.
Like, and that's nothing to them. It's just their New York apartment that they occasionally go to. Because I realized, like, Americans have to pay, is it 7.5% every year to the value of their property. It's like a tax thing.
Mm.
And so $44 million, what, 7% of that is like, what, three?
Yeah, let's see him do like, math.
That's per year they have to pay just in tax.
Yeah.
So you've got to have a lot of money. But I'm gonna get there.
The thing, I think it also comes from how wealthy your family was. Like my family, second generation, they did well in business, so that they'd be what you call new money, where they didn't have any money as kids. And then by the time my parents were like 30, 40, they were able to send me and my brother with a scholarship to a private school. And then by the time that we were all sort of had left school, like they'd done really well for themselves. And the way that I saw them show that exuberance was with old WOGs in houses. So,
everything granite.
It wasn't granite, but like, you know, the spiral staircase and
yes, the chandelier.
Yeah, the chandelier and like the house they had in Brighton. It was so weird. Like, I never really felt like it was a home, if you know what I mean. Like, it was just so big. So it was like three stories, so underground basement. First floor, second floor, six bedrooms, seven bathrooms.
And I just never understand that.
I never once thought like this is a home. Like it just and because of it, they never really had the money to populate it with the furniture that was necessary.
Oh.
And it was just always empty and cold. It was really, really weird. And
I remember, you grew up?
This is where I sort of spent my late teens. Like we moved there into that house when I was like 14, 15.
Gotcha.
And it was really weird when they sold it. I remember I moved out of home at about 25 finally. They kicked me out. They were like, we're selling this house and also the house we're moving into doesn't have enough rooms for you. Yeah. So see ya.
There's no more six bedrooms. It's one bedroom.
There's two bedrooms, one for your brother, one for your sister. Oh, you could sleep on the couch if you want. I was like, fuck that. It's already clashing with my dad. So I had to move. And it was so funny because it was bought by like, this is when the Chinese started really buying expensive property. And it was bought by a Chinese family who were moving here from Beijing and they had one kid and they bought this house. And it's like, why? It's so, why do you need this thing? It's so unrealistic. So for me, like to go back to the question, I don't know if I'd ever... If I had that sort of wealth that my parents had, I don't know that I'd ever spend it on exuberance like that. I sort of like the understatedness of things.
Cozy, I think is the word. Your house just, it didn't sound cozy.
Yeah.
I love cozy. Like I feel everything. So like as soon as I bought my apartment, I was like, great. Went to like antique shops, like vintage stores, you know, curbside collections and just have filled it with so much stuff that it's, each room is a bit, I mean, it's a two bedroom. It's nothing huge, but it's just really cozy and warm.
Mm.
Yeah, I want a big place. Like I'd love a big house. But I do think you're right. Six bedrooms and seven bathrooms is a bit excessive.
It's a bit much. But I know you mean that coziness. I feel like that's something that my wife's family really taught me is smelling the roses a bit, comfiness, coziness, the nice things in life that make you – like my wife's family's a little bit Germanic, and so like there's this term that she went she's always used. It's called hygge, and it's like this thing in Scandinavia where like it's just blanket – by the fireplace, like a mug of cocoa type thing.
Yeah.
There's something about that. That's my shit.
The dream. Yeah.
You. Yes, you. Are you intrigued by this episode? If so, go to our footer on the website, neuralle.com. We're going to give you an insight each week. It's going to be on business, marketing, or a topic that we covered in the episode at all. We'd love your support, and it would help us in developing the intellect around this series. But without going on too much longer, let's get back into this episode. We were speaking before about these type of individuals giving inspiration for content. Do you have any sort of process or principles around how you create this sort of stuff, or is it... are you a type of person where it's a fleeting moment? You have an idea, you see something on the crafts channel, and then just start reacting to it.
It's pretty much all just fleeting ideas that happen. Then I go, right, let's just film this now. There's no preparation. Like there's no meetings or discussions. It's just like, let's just do this. And that's been a hard, I've had to adjust. I have to plan now because it's we.
Because the business.
And I've got a videographer and a content producer. I mean, poor Phoebe is struggling to produce content when all I'm doing is saying, yep, let's do this right now. She's like, oh, how do I produce that? And you want to film it now? And so the next step is to then start producing stuff and starting to take us outside. And Ben and Phoebe are both working on a project that I'm not involved in where they're going to put me in situations that I don't want to be in, I'm afraid of everything. So just the classic stuff like I did indoor skydiving. Like I said, the rule was no bungee jumping and no skydiving. Like I will not do those. And then they took me to indoor skydiving and they're like, it doesn't sound scary. It was so scary. And then they're trying to organize with Queensland police to put me in a big padded suit and have sick the dogs on you, the drug dogs, which I think is terrifying. I think there's fighter jets going in planes. I struggle in a commercial plane. I'm not a good flyer.
Interesting.
And spiders and snakes and all that shit.
Because you've had different waves, if you think about it, in your career of content. Like you think about Trish, a lot of your content was character-driven then. And now it seems more and more it's becoming like reality-driven, like Christian does this, if that makes sense. Yes. Do you think that's like your sweet spot with what you can do?
It's hard because everyone's like, we don't really want Trish so much. Like we prefer when you're just being yourself and doing your funny stuff that way. But we do find the parodies and the mocking of, people really funny. And so it's just finding a balance. And you've got to change it up. You've got to do different stuff.
Yeah, you've got to be evolving. And it sort of sounds like with Ben and Phoebe, what you have now is your own like radio team.
Yeah.
Like you're actually creating what you wanted back in the day.
Yes, exactly. Like I'm now fulfilling that need to be oddly Kyle Sandilands. Like I'm there. Like I ended up creating it myself. It wasn't on radio, but now it's just online.
What was it about Kyle as like a leader that you really respected? Because I grew up, I'm a 90s baby, so born in 1990, and the top 30 hits was like the show that I like.
Hot
I would
30
go,
countdown.
Hot 30 countdown.
Yeah, get it right. Come on.
Okay, every time I do it, I had Jace on as well and I said the wrong fucking thing.
Oh, wow.
He's like, good branding.
Yeah. That was $1 million well spent.
Dolly Doctor.
Yes.
I
Nikki
loved
Goldstein.
It. Yeah. Nikki Goldstein. Yeah. I just,
yeah.
There was something about, and I love Kyle to this day. I think I really like him as a creator. So for me, it's the fact that he's really raw and he's vulnerable. What is it for you about Kyle that you sort of tried to align yourself with?
Look, to be fair, I think I aligned myself with Kyle and Jackie together. Yeah. Like I wanted to be Kyle and Jackie because she's really emotional, compassionate. Not that he isn't, but like she's just this beautiful human being and he's just somewhat of an asshole that really will say, he'll just say how what everyone is thinking and sort of be really blunt and honest, and then Jackie sort of softens the blow a little bit. And so I just really like the two of them, and they just made me laugh, and I would listen to them while doing my homework, you know, doing the Hot 30 countdown. It was such a fun team, it was such a fun energy, and that's why when radio was suggested to me, I was like, oh, my God, how cool would it be to work on Kyle and Jackie O's team? I would love to be Kyle. I would love to do what he does. And, it, you know, it's like any celebrity. Like, you watch them, listen to them enough, you feel like you know who they are. And so I just felt I knew who they were. They felt like best friends. They felt really fun. And I just found, because he's smutty. Like, my mum hates him, but she loves him. Like, she's like, oh, that's really funny. And, you know, she read his book, but she's like, ooh, he's crass and awful. But, like, have you seen what he did? And then he did this. And
absolutely, and love him. They love to hate him.
Love to hate him.
Yeah.
And, I just, I'm a little bit, like, he's very camp.
Yeah.
And he's very sexual. And look, there are some things he says that I go, oh, I wouldn't be that honest. Like, I'm a little bit more Jackie on the being polite front. But I just loved how real he is. And, you know, everyone says be authentic, but I don't think people know how to be authentic. You know, they think they do and they try to be, but I'm like, you're not. Whereas he is.
Mm. Have you met him?
Twice, really fleetingly. Jackie knows who I am, which I die. Like, she liked one of my videos and commented, and I was like crying in the corner. And she's apparently, because I know her entire radio team, like, they're all friends of mine.
You're
and
right.
So I'd be like, oh my God, Jackie just likes something. And they're like, oh, wow, she never likes anything. I was like, oh my God, this is the greatest. Kyle, I mean, he's not on social media, but I bumped into him at one of the radio awards. He has no idea who I am because he's not on social media.
Yeah.
So I've met him once at the Radio Awards, really lovely, and then on the red carpet at the Arias when I was dressed as Trish, I was interviewing people and I was like, oh my God, Kyle's there, and I was like screaming at him, and he came over for a little bit and he was like, oh, I'm really hot and sweaty, and so I just gave him, I had a Trish tea towel with my face on it, and he just wiped, he was real sexual and wiped.
Like, oh, thanks.
Yeah.
And then and just walked like, off.
Mm, and then just threw it back at me.
Yeah.
And it was, but it was... Yeah. I don't know if I would ever want to meet him because I'd be too much of a fan and I'd probably embarrass myself. And also, I think I'd find him very intimidating.
Yeah, don't meet your heroes. I think that's I think that's definitely a thing. But if you did, let's say you had an hour to sit down, have a couple hours even. Let's say you had the opportunity to sit down and have lunch with Kyle and Jackie O. What would you want to know? What would you want to discuss with them?
I just don't think I could. I don't think I could do it because
you'd probably like you'd spend the first
of all,
hour I'm, just losing it.
Well, I'd be like, and remember when you did this, and remember, like, you know, repeat the content that you did back to them. I also know them well enough to know they would never want to do a lunch. They would hate it. So I'd be like, never mind.
Why? Why do you think they would hate it?
Because they're just like radio people. Radio people never want to do anything past 9:01 a.m. If in a great world they wanted to, I don't know. I just talk to them about their favorite moments, behind the scenes shit that like we may not know about. Was there anything that was rigged? Like, I really want to know if Million Dollar Head in the Sand was rigged. Just a lot of radio chat because, you know, radio was my life for 9 years. And when you're in radio, it's your life. Like, you don't do anything else.
Yeah, you're in a bit of a bubble.
Yeah. Oh, you're absolutely completely in a bubble.
Mm.
And so I just talk to them about just radio shit.
The funniest thing about that is every time I speak to someone who's been on radio, particularly of the company you're in, it's you're in the company bubble. Like, you won't talk to ARN or SCA or vice versa.
But also, you're in a company bubble and every company is rating number one.
Yeah.
They're all number one. but it's so radio is so ridiculous. It's just so dumb. And the thing is, I mean, this probably comes from a bitter place as well. I just feel like they don't realize, they have to realize that they're dying. But I just, when I was there, I could see it. I'm like, you're not embracing Facebook and Instagram and TikTok. You're like, you're not investing in these new platforms, you know, and they compete with you. Radio does not sit above Facebook or TikTok. Like, if anything, they're now above radio. People don't go to radio for anything, in my mind. You don't go for new music or news like you used to. You're really only listening to it when you're in the car because it's all you've got. But now with, you know, fancier cars, I've got Apple Play and I listen to Spotify. Like, I don't actually consume radio through radio. I consume radio through Carrie and Tommy through their Instagram, Jason PJ through their TikTok, Kyle and Jack through their TikTok and Facebook. And like, I'm not listening to radio. I'm still watching it, which is weird. And I think a lot of people are, like, a lot of, like, Jason PJ are just kill it on social media, but it doesn't translate into radio ratings. And I think a lot of these big media companies, TV, mostly just TV and radio, use social media as a marketing tool. They don't use it as a platform to create unique content. And I don't think they ever will. And by the time, you know, they hire people that understand how to use these social platforms, it'll be too late.
Yeah, the problem is that they suffer from, it's not the innovator's dilemma, it's the incumbent's dilemma, where they've been innovated, so people now no longer have to invest in all this infrastructure. And the best case I've actually seen of this was a recent guest. I don't know if you've ever heard of Ticker News or Ticker TV or AusBiz TV.
Oh, yes, yes, I have.
So Aaron Young used to run Sky News business in Melbourne. So they were shutting it down. They obviously had told him, and he realized, well, fuck, I can do this like on my own. And so he starts it. He tests it out. The first year or so is just blood, sweat, and tears working it out. But now you go into his office, and that was probably the most enlightening experiences. So I interviewed him. A week later, I go in to talk about TikTok for one of their segments. And you just look at their infrastructure versus a network. You know, having been into a network or a radio station for talent work,
it is like it's equipment.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's like millions and millions of dollars worth of stuff.
Well, that panel, you know, that they is $750,000 each one of those.
It's ridiculous.
Use.
It's absolutely ridiculous.
And there's two, four, six, eight. There's maybe 10 in the, you know, SCA building.
Jesus. It's
just $5 million. Yeah.
It's just insane. And then I go on a Ticker and like, so their broadcasting system is unreal. It's like, it's so, I don't know. There's something about it. I remember my producer was just frothing because they have he was like, dude, this is unreal. This is what we're going to do when we move into the studio. And the thing is that Ticker's setup isn't crazy. It's just like a Blackmagic deck. They've got two guys sitting there, one that does like manages the bookings, one that is literally doing the live stuff. You've got a lady in a booth doing the news, a lady in Sydney doing extended segments, and then a main studio for like deep interviews. And it's all in this space in Richmond. And I'm like, holy fuck, this is a multi-million dollar business. And like the infrastructure costs are just nothing. Like Channel 9 and all that, they're stuffed. They're in trouble. They're in real big trouble when these businesses get more capital on scale to them.
It's just so hard because they're all run and their board is older men who were managing the stations back in the heyday when they, you know, probably doing lines of coke off strippers' belly buttons. You know, like they were making so much money in television and they just... They're like, but why are people not investing in TV? Or maybe it's because we're not. There's just so many things. And the thing that I realized now that I left the bubble is that rating survey in radio.
It doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense, but there's also a crucial element missing, and that is the percentage of people who aren't listening. So the 100% of the audience is if 100% of Australians were listening. It's that sample size, you know, like 20 people, you know, you knock on a door. Do you listen to radio? No. Okay, well, I'll go to the next house. Do you listen to radio? No. Okay, well, I'll go to the next one. And then, oh, yes, you do. Can you fill out this book? And they only give that book to the person who listens. And so there's no percentage of, there's no calculation of people who aren't listening. So it's always going to be 100%. Like it's always going to be, you know, and you can't see the trend. There is a trend happening and they're hemorrhaging money and
the survey, someone said it. I was going to say the servos that you spoke about on Luke and Lewis's podcast was really interesting. I just want you to maybe touch on how it's actually done for people because I don't think people really understand.
Oh, Yeah. So radio surveys are physical books you have to tick. I've done them a few times when I was in high school. We got randomly selected, which is very rare. And so we got individual 6 books, a book per person. And it's basically an Excel spreadsheet of a book with all the radio stations listed and all these times from midnight to like 11:59 p.m. every day. And you just tick these boxes of when you were listening and who you were listening to, and that is it. Then at the end of the, I think it's 2 weeks, they come back and they collect the book and then they tally that up and then they spit out these results of what radio stations are doing what. Now, it's only a handful of Australians getting these books, and then it's just times by the certain amount of population, and that's how they get the numbers. So it's a really, really dodgy system. But there is just nothing to reflect someone who isn't listening. They just ignore the results of people who aren't listening. It's weird when you see there's a thing called QM, which is the cumulative amount of people who are listening, which, so, you know, they boast like there's 1 million listeners this week. We have 1 million people listening, unique individuals listening. And that number has steadily remained the same over the course of the last, you know, 10 to 12 years. It's gone up because of population, but it's the radio people sit there and go, well, we're clearly not losing listeners. Mm. You know, one in, you look at like Kyle and Jack, apparently one in, I don't know, they rate really well, 1 in 10 people listen to Kyle and Jackie O. I mean, it might be for them because they're such a hero station, but like you just go, are they though?
So you think that it's totally unrealistic because the way that it's
totally unrealistic. Yeah. But I mean, I'm not a professional and I don't work for GMK or whatever. And I'm real also cynical and I hate radio and I really want them to understand how much money and how much power and how easy it is to get onto socials and do things that way. That I could just come across as jaded. But someone also said to me something really like not profound. Pretty profound. All these new media is coming in, right? And when you look, like Netflix launches and everyone invests and they throw their money at Netflix, they don't care if it makes a loss because, you know, they're in it for the long term. And so they're not expecting, their shareholders are not expecting a return because they're in it for the long haul. Radio, their shareholders need a return because radio was made so long ago. And so every year, with less and less money coming in, they're making redundancies after redundancies. They're downsizing. And it's just a spiral of them going, how do we make more money? Like, how do we return this money to the shareholders or to whoever? You know, how do we keep making a profit? And they're just shrinking. And even being in some of the Sydney offices and even in ARN, and you just go in there and you're like, why would you spend millions of dollars on all these new desks and computer equipment? And like, you fired everyone.
Yeah.
You know, and they've got all these beautiful TVs on the wall and they've got all these things going on and like refurbishments happening. And I'm like, ugh, do you not see what's happening? And
the thing as well is what's crazy is the amount of debt these companies carry, these holding companies, SCA, ARN, et cetera. It's really interesting. Yeah, they carry a lot. Like, they've got these massive credit lines. I think SCA's got $200 million of those. Something
to
like
who?
That. To the banks. Yeah.
That's not great.
No, it's not good. Right. Yeah, you should read the financial reports. It's the same thing that's happened in sort of the agency land, like the area that I've gotten into. If you look at all the holding companies, like your big fours, like WPP, they're all just debt-laden zombies. It's the same thing because all the platforms have just hold them out. So, there's going to come a time, I reckon, where maybe a decade from now, a lot of these large businesses will just collapse and then there's going to be more opportunity than there is now, I think, because there'll just be a whole bunch of talent that are just let loose.
Well, I'm also seeing a lot of the talent in radio and on TV, they realize and they're like, I see like the Channel 9 guys all over TikTok. They're doing that. They've got their own profiles. They're doing all these own things and they're doing really good at it. And so you can sort of see that they're like, well, the ship's sinking. Better look over here. Better sort of diversify my audience.
Before I ask you about the new strategy for Fuck Off, Where do you sit with TikTok at the moment? Where do you think see things going? Because I've had experience, a lot of experience now being a like one of our specialties is TikTok. We do a lot of work there. We've got an event with TikTok up in Sydney on the 28th of May. We've got 20 creators now. I look at the engagement rate and it's out of fucking control. Like some of the stats on some of our creators, it's like 62% engagement rate, organic engagement. You know, people are still standoffish about getting onto the platform.
Yes.
But I guess I'm curious from your perspective, how do you see it as a creator?
It's the first thing when people go, oh, I want to get into radio. I'm like, well, do you? Maybe do a podcast. And then if you want to create content, TikTok is the most motivating platform to go on because it's for creators. You are so discoverable on that platform and you get these huge numbers with virtually no following. And so that it fuels you to want to make more and make better content. They're also, the team there are super, I found them quite responsive. They reach out. They're offering creator days. I caught up with them while I was here. Uh-huh. They're all young, yeah. You know, they're all on the platforms.
That's another thing as well, is like the people that that are the creator contacts at TikTok. They only started in like 22. January. Yeah, they're so young.
And so young. I caught up with them and I was like, I'm 34 and they were all like in their early 20s. And I was like, oh, do you remember like when like the nanny was on? They're like, what's that? I'm like, oh my God. Do you know the Spice Girls? You know?
So have you met Carla and all that sort of creator team?
Yes.
Okay, that's awesome. Yeah, because there was that guy, I don't know if you ever met Demir, based out of Shanghai.
Oh my God, legend. He was my first contact. That poor bastard in charge of so many creators. And then we got added into a WhatsApp group of like 200 people. And I had to like block the group because you like, and he responds to everyone and he does everything. And that was my first sort of, you know, I'd been on Instagram and Facebook for years, but like, it's like, hello.
Yeah.
But then I'm on TikTok and I had about 200,000 people and he messaged me. He was like, oh, do you want to be verified? Do you want this? Do you want to do this? And I was like, wow, I had to beg. For Facebook and
you know what's Instagram. Funny is I got a contact from a Facebook creator contact in Singapore like a month ago. So they've like cottoned on to what TikTok is doing, which is very interesting. So they've
also stepped up their game and they're like Facebook, their team is really lovely. But the issues I have with Facebook is TikTok is for creators and they're really good with creators. The Facebook team is the creator side of it is great. But overall, Facebook is not a platform for creators. So they're met with a lot of roadblocks within their own sort of company.
Corporate structure, rules, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of sad, but it is the way it is. And I'm just super excited about TikTok.
Me too.
I just, like I said, we were chatting before about the usage on our phones. I spend hours. You know what I'm going to do after this to fucking decompress? Go watch TikTok.
Go. That's exactly. I'm like, just lie in bed and swipe away.
Just scroll.
Yeah.
Fuck off. Okay, so you've worked out that you can't just put it all in in one piece of stock. I know you've got the crystal and a bunch of other things now. How are you thinking about the cycle and strategy of the business over the next year?
Okay, well, I've only thought about it until Christmas. Yeah. Don't stress me out. I don't want to think about it for next year because it's an empty whiteboard. I've got nothing. Well, the plan now is a new product every month. So this month, I'm still coasting on book sales this month. So I've signed a lot of copies of books. I should earn enough to get by for May. Plus, I'm also doing a Share the Dignity pendant, which is a charity that I work with. So, I mean, that money isn't going to me. I'll see it go into the bank account and be like, oh, we're great. But then I'm like, well, no, that's for them. So that's this month. Next month, I think we're doing dick soaps. Okay. So there's soaps. It's like, imagine a dildo made of soap.
Yeah.
And you wash your hands with it. So it suctions onto the bench and then you just slide your hand up and down it, soap your hand up and then wash that. So we've got some of that.
That's fucking hilarious.
I've got tea. Okay. I'm a big fan of tea. I don't know if you can see me drink tea.
Green tea? Entire... Jasmine?
No, I can't do green tea. I'm old and it messes with my indigestion. Uh-huh. I love a jasmine tea.
Yeah.
But I'm making, it's Christian's Unique Ultra, God, what did I call it? Christian's Ultra Noir, N-O-R, T-E-A, so C-U-N-T. And then so that'll be coming out. That's the new sort of thing. And then we've got Christmas. So we've got Bon Bons coming out with some products in it, Christmas decorations. So I'm like constantly thinking of a new product. Father's Day, I've got something I'm dedicating to Dad, because my dad is almost more famous than I am. And so every time I go and visit, because he's just like this cute little old man who's like, oh, come and have a look at the wood pile that I did film that. And people are like, oh, that's cute. He always has a notepad in his pocket.
Yeah, the notepad.
Just the notepad and a pen. And so for Father's Day, I thought it would be nice to honor my father by releasing a notepad and a pen, the John Hull pen. And then the notepad, on the front of the notepad has this like essay. I asked Dad on a phone call, I was like, oh, why do you have a notepad? Because I was going to get a quote to put on the front. Oh, God, he went on for like 5 minutes telling me why he has a notepad. So then I condensed that five-minute conversation into text, and it's printed on the front of all these notepads.
Jesus Christ.
So we'll do that. Yeah. So it's constantly thinking about how can I get a product out of something? How can I sell it?
Yeah.
And how, like, what's the gimmick? Because I feel gimmicky shit. It's not useful.
And who's the first person you want to hire that replaces a certain thing that you're doing on a weekly or monthly basis when you get to that point?
Yeah, I want to hire someone to just totally look after the shop. Like, I love coming up with the product ideas, but then they go and source it, make it happen, deal with customer service, orders, making sure that the sales are happening.
And so are you doing all that on your own at the moment, or with like an agency or something?
No, I shouldn't lie. I'm not doing much. I've got a warehouse that picks and packs all the orders.
Uh-huh.
They now look at my customer service emails. And then what I do is boss poor old Phoebe around and tell her to do all the other stuff. But it's just, I think, sorting out products and timelines, and you've got to order this when, stock management. And when you make the product, it's sort of like stock management for the product, like resin, flowers, pendants, rings, loops, key rings, making sure we've got enough to keep everything being made. And it's just it's just a daily thing, constantly ordering, constantly checking.
Yeah, it sounds like you need like an e-com manager. E-commerce
manager. Is that what
manager.
I need? Okay. Yeah.
That's what you need. Look, you've done a lot of these interviews now. There's always a constant theme of topics that you would have in all of these. What's the question that you get asked that does your fucking head in? Like that repeat question.
There's nothing. Like I love doing this, and I love sharing my story and talking about it. I don't know. I really wish I had these great answers, but there's not. I don't think I've been around long enough to roll my eyes at, oh, this question again.
Yeah.
It's usually, I always get asked about Trish. Trish is in everything. Like, when did Trish first start? I'm like, is that interesting? That's like so boring. Like, and I don't have a great answer for that either. You know, I bought a wig and then I imitated a bitchy mother.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny looking at your content. There's always someone saying, when is Trish coming back?
Oh, yeah. Every video. Do this, but with the Trish wig on.
Do it, but with Trish.
Where's Be funny Trish? Again. Yeah.
Dance, monkey, please.
Well, if you throw money at me, I will absolutely dance.
Yeah. Look, I want to jump into some rapid fire questions to finish things off.
Yes.
What's been the best purchase for you under $200?
But I have so many good things that aren't under 200. Can I say this one? It was 280, and it was a soy sauce lamp. It's a fish, you know, the fish soy sauce?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a big one. It's probably like the size of a big teapot, and it's a light. And you just turn it on. It's made of glass, and it's just beautiful.
So it doesn't have soy sauce in it. It's just made of
If you Google hello, you Googled it. Yeah.
That's cool, man.
What else? You know what? I live alone and hate people, and so my Google Home just keeps me company.
Okay.
And I can ask it to do shit, and it just doesn't ask questions. It just does what I tell it to do.
Yeah, right. Get the bath. Have you integrated into the new bathroom somehow?
Oh, God. I was like, I need a Google Home for my bath so I can like play soft jazz, because I've been playing it off my phone. And then when you get your hand wet, your touchscreen doesn't work.
Yeah.
And so I get really angry. So I was like, I'll just buy a Google Home and put it in and you know, light a few candles, have a
bath. Google Home could get the bath going, the music, the lighting.
Oh, you know what I can't wait for? Like a fully connected, integrated home.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, hey, Google, fill the bath at 70 degrees at 30% full. And it just happens.
Yeah, see, that's what I'd spend my money on. Not a big place, just a really efficient place.
Yes, that's perfect.
Morning and evening routine, what does that look like?
You know, I've just started to be a little bit skin conscious. We used to just wake up, roll out of bed, pick clothes up off the floor and waltz on into even radio and now the office. But now I discovered this is so wanky. When you've got money, this is what you do. I only buy products from Aesop now. They are stunning. And so I used it for a couple of days and I got like 3 compliments on my skin. So like, right, I'm using this for the rest of my life. And so I wash my face and I moisturize and that is it.
So do you
shower?
Have you fallen into the sort of hyaluronic acid serum type stuff yet?
No, not yet. No, I'm literally just a face cleanse and a moisturized.
Because I would shop at Aesop as well. And then what happened was we had the wedding coming up and Lauren's like, oh, you should go try a Hydrafacial. I got this done. I was like, I'll give it a go. And it was fucking so much fun because they show you like all the gunk in your skin in the canister. And then she's like, oh, you really need to get this thing and that thing because it stops you getting all this gunk. And I'm like, oh, so that's why like Lauren and all these girls are getting this hyaluronic acid stuff and they all have like plump skin because it's sort of, you know, anyway, it's there's so some technical thing about it. And I was sold hook, line and sinker. So,
oh, mate, so am I. Like if I saw gunk, like as soon as you said that, I'm like, right, well, I need to get onto this.
Yeah. Are you like into pimple poppers or any stuff like that?
I find it revolting, but like if I get served a TikTok of that, I just watch the whole thing in disgust.
Yeah, the suction stuff.
I saw the suction one. It's got a camera right inside the suctiony thing and she's dragging it along this guy's nose. And I was like, oh, I need one of those because it's just sucking out. It's so foul.
That's basically like, what they do, but it's like it's water-based, so it doesn't fuck your skin up. Christian, last question for you. What was your go-to item in the fridge during the lockdown before you moved to Brisbane?
Well, I mean, I hate that this is the answer because everyone thinks I eat so much caramel. I don't, but it was just caramel. And then it was marble.
Yeah, right.
Marble is it's so delicious.
I don't get the fascination with caramel. I still haven't gotten it.
Well, have you tried it though?
Yeah, I've tried it. It's good. I'll give you it's good, but I don't know. I'm more like a Ferrero Rocher type of guy.
Ruffalo?
Yeah, Ruffalo. What about Bueno? Do you like Bueno at all?
Yeah, but it's not enough chocolate when you buy it. It's not chocolatey enough. I love Kinder Surprise chocolate.
But
again, there's not enough of it.
Yeah, I would like you know how to fix that. You just buy lots of them or you just buy the Kinder Bueno sharing pack. That's what you got to do.
Oh, I've never heard of that.
Yeah, you just buy like a share pack and just eat the whole thing on your own. That's what I do. Caramel. Yeah, I've got to get back into it. I don't know.
No, you don't. If you don't, like a lot of people don't like it. It's really, really sweet. It's really full on. Like I used to be able to eat a whole block of marble, but I can't eat a whole block of caramel because it's too sugary.
Caramello is something that I can get behind. I love the cream, not the creaminess, the sort of
caramel, the liquidy.
What would you call caramel? Liquidy caramel,
like a fudge.
Yeah, like a fudgy type feeling. Well, look, Christian, thank you so much for coming on, mate. I know
you're so welcome. Thanks for having me.
I know you're traveling and you probably want to get out of your hotel apartment. And
no, absolutely not.
You just want to go sit on TikTok.
This is absolutely fine. Yep. Go on TikTok and Grindr, and that's about it. It's my life.
Where can people find you on the interwebs and what you're up to?
Just Google Christian Hull and the platform you want.
That's a baller stage of life though, huh?
No, but I've always said that. Like, I don't know where to push people. I'm like, but also like Facebook, it's just easy to Google Christian Hull Facebook and then it gives you the link then facebook.com/.
I would say as a starting point, I would strongly suggest people check you out on TikTok. That is one disappointing thing about TikTok is because it's so new, the first things that arrive when you search Christian Hull is your website, then Facebook. And I think TikTok is the piece de resistance. It's your magnum opus at the moment.
You're sitting on my butt guessing paint colours. Jesus.
Christian, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for checking out this episode. If you do like it, please subscribe and, of course, like if you're watching the YouTube video as well. We'd really appreciate that. You can also find our Clips channel in the description. For audio, if you're not already listening, you can search Uncommon on Pocket Cast, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts quite easily. For video, if you're not watching, you can search Uncommon on YouTube. And for behind the scenes takes and clips on social media, then definitely check out at @uncommon_show on Instagram. But otherwise, look, thanks so much for tuning in. And until next time, thanks for listening.